My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, a podcast where I, your host, try to give you some tips on how you can explain all this weird, wild, crazy conspiracy stuff to the people you love most. Because that's what I've been trying to do for the past 10 years with no success. I've been telling everybody that our government is shady. But every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. The hollow earth, UFOs, aliens invading. And they don't want to hear it. They're just like, oh, here we go, Mark. Off again with your...
Mark being Mark again.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's the thing about podcasts is when you're on the air, and it's like therapy, you know? If I can't talk to my family about this stuff, I'll talk to you, Matt, and all our listeners.
You know, just tell your whole podcast.
Yeah. So who are we talking about today, Matt?
As another year has come to pass, it is time once more to pass the talking stick with a mentor, a mystic, and a man grounded in the real, a subjective term to most, until you truly define our bounds, or lack of them. Joining me, twaining the fork of the Susquehanna alchemist, Mike Wan, joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you for tuning in. And enjoy this conversation with my friend, Mike Wan.
When you begin to pay attention, when you're beginning to pay attention to your life and your own life, you're going to be able to see certain cycles within your own life. And if last year the party then kicked off whatever the River and Star ceremony was, well, this year's party is going to kick off the next iteration. And I know it's going to be different, and I know it's going to be deeper, because now, like, the details are different. I have, like, this actual Furba in hand right now. And so then the question is, well, then what is it going to be this year? What is going to be this quote-unquote aerocirculation, this thing of preparation for a new destiny? And I know exactly what that's already going to be, because it's already in motion. And that is, and this is something which you and I have discussed, you're very aware of this, and it is the grounding consciousness course which I'm doing. And whereas last calendar year, if you will, was perhaps a preparation of the land, this now is going to be a preparation of the minds. And what the grounding consciousness course ultimately is it deals with astrology, astronomy, consciousness, history, and conspiracy. And it's really not about learning anything as much as it is unlearning everything.
It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans.
$829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. And with me today is an old friend, someone who has been on the show many times before, but not yet in 2025, kicking the new year off right with my friend, the Susquehanna Alchemist, Mike Wan. Mike, it's a pleasure to have you back. You have migrated in typical fashion down to the warm weather of sunny Florida. I hope you don't mind me disclosing your location, but tell us how you've been. Tell us how things are going down there in Florida. Welcome back to the show.
Well, first off, Mark, it's a pleasure to see you. Thank you for having me. And yeah, it's been a while. It seems like our connection and communication, it comes and it goes. And this autumn, there's been a lot of shifting, I know, in my life and I think in your life. And so we haven't really had an opportunity to like connect. And so now seems like a great time to really settle in, have a conversation and bring each other up to speed. So it should be a good one. That being said, yeah, I'm down in Florida. And that's where this story is going to begin, or we'll move to it when I move into the story portion. But I've been down here since the end of December, and I'll probably be heading back up to Pennsylvania in the next week or so. So I'm glad that we can have this conversation now, because the farm doesn't have internet access. And so that's one of the reasons why I've been MIA from a lot of shows, because there's just no way to communicate.
Yeah, it's definitely something we have had to navigate around. Literally, while you're navigating, we record the podcast because that's the only time you have service. So sometimes people are like, oh, I love listening to you and Mike talk, but could you just tell Mike to stay still, or could you just like record it when he's not driving? And I'm like, well, unfortunately, that is the only time we can record. But yeah, it is fun to do these shows with you, Mike. We never quite know where we're going to start or where we're going to end. At least maybe I don't. But it is an interesting time of year. Don't let me sidetrack if this has nothing to do with what you have to bring to the table, but I do find it apropos that we're talking today on the first day of Donald Trump's golden age of American history. I don't know if you caught that in his inaugural speech, but he announced that this is the beginning of America's golden age, which I find that stupendous considering what we learned from Bibu Def Misra about the Kali Yuga cycle and how we actually are, in classical terms, what both Greek and Vedic, entering the golden age. So here's Trump with his bright orange hair on fire like the sun, bringing us into this supposed golden age. I don't know how much of that I believe or buy into, or how much of it is just political showboatery. But yeah, he's been making a lot of definitive statements and passing some pretty prolific, what do you call them, executive orders today. So it's kind of an energetic day for this.
Without a doubt. And one, I wasn't familiar with the inaugural speech. I knew that it occurred yesterday, but I didn't keep my pulse on it. But then I'm curious about, you mentioned someone who was talking to you about the end of the Kali Yuga cycle and the beginning of the golden age. And I'm curious, how did they define that, or how did they determine that that's where we were in the cycle? Are you able to kind of like explain their logic?
I could paraphrase. That was a conversation I had 4 months ago, so it's a little far back in the queue. But Bibu used several different calendrical systems from around the world, and I'm realizing now, oh, we're getting into your bread and butter here. So yeah, no, I'll send you his website, but he used just ancient calendars to basically approximate that
right.
They were all kind of pointing to this time period. I don't know specifically or mathematically
right.
How
you're like,
did
it sounded good. Like it sounds like I've listened to you yeah. articulate, like, and this is how so much of our experiential reality works. We hook onto stories, and it's almost irrelevant if the story has any legs or any teeth or any grounding, as much as like, does the story take root? And so the story needs to take root both in the individual, but then also if they can then see that story taking root in the external world, whether like other people, like, yeah, I'm seeing that too, or they're seeing anything experiential that matches the story. That's when a loop starts to happen. Like your inner world and the outer world link up on a certain frequency, on a certain story, on a certain perspective, and then it begins to grow. And so to me, that's almost even more significant than like, is this the official golden age or not? Because what really matters is one's experience per se. And then secondly, when dealing with something as the supposed time frames of these cycles, I mean, what? I don't know what they do, the yugas, if those are like 5,000 years or 25,000 years or 250,000 years, I don't know. But it's longer than your typical human lifetime. So a transition could be a couple hundred years. Meaning like the you can't like necessarily pinpoint per se. But that being said, it's like so much of our experience is built upon like how consciousness works, expectations, and all of these sort of things. And when we can ground onto something which supposedly serves us, well, then we can grow upon that. And if yesterday began the golden age of the American Empire, well, then rah rah for that, like win for all of those who are going to win. It'll be interesting. Time will tell. But that is certainly, it is generally speaking, that idea very much in alignment with my experience, both in terms of the life I'm living and then also the perspective I'm sharing. So those are two different sort of things. And it being that we are things are always in motion, let's say. Like there's never a time that we're not like culture or paradigm is not changing. So that's always in play. But maybe like a fork in the road or maybe another way of thinking about it. I can't think of what the word is, but there's a point when one cell begins to split into two cells, and there's this moment right before that one cell is two individual cells. Like maybe we're at that point. There's certainly reason to believe that like, be careful for what you think the golden age is. I'm pretty certain I heard that in yesterday's inaugural speech. There was a lot of talk about like the doubling down in our future, going towards cryptocurrency and blockchain. And like, that's the same old story. You know, that's going to be different, but something is changing right now. And if we could be a little bit more grounded in recognizing that maybe the cells are splitting, or there is a fork in the road, or there is like, this is a moment in which there is some choice which a human being can make. Like, it certainly seems like, from my experience, like we're in it. That's for certain.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what to make of that. The blockchain
definitely doesn't sound inviting.
Yeah, it's
we're being seduced for it. We're definitely being seduced. I mean, without a doubt. But, you know, it is what it is. This is where we are. Maybe I can I switch gears a little bit? And
switch
I want to.
That was just the intro.
I'll tie it back into where we're talking. But I wanted to bring up to speed or bring you up to speed and maybe the listeners of what's been going on most recently. But in order to do so, there has to be a little bit of backtracking as to how we got to this moment, right?
Yeah.
So GC, that's what I like to call it, Gregorian calendar. So Gregorian calendar year 2024. I mean, that seems like two lifetimes ago. That doesn't even seem like, I don't even remember that person who was living it. But so my Gregorian calendar year 2024 was probably the biggest focal point was something which I called the River and Stars Ceremony Tour. And that was the bleeding edge of the previous years of A Story Waiting to Pierce You and Abaris, the Mongolian shaman. Like, you and I have talked about this like multiple times. And so from all of that inspiration, it kind of inspired this what was called the River and Star Ceremony, which is moving all around the Susquehanna River, doing what's called water weaving, like weaving the waters, and then also doing starboard natural astrology for the moment and doing it within community with like other people coming together. And the purpose came directly from that story, that book, A Story Waiting to Pierce You, which was how Abaris was an aerocirculator who went on aerocirculation missions, for lack of a better word. And the purpose of an aerocirculation was to prepare the land for a new destiny. And part of that was like not having any idea of what the new destiny was. Like Abaris didn't have any responsibility of the way life was unfolding as much as it was Abaris was setting the table or maybe even clearing away the old table and preparing for the next one. And on a personal level, that really resonated because I hold that position. Like, I don't know what the future is. I know that any ideas that I would have probably been formed by the paradigm itself. And so if I wanted to be involved in a different trajectory, it had to be a trajectory that was not created by the paradigm itself. So there has to be a willingness to step into the unknown. So that's what like kind of the River and Star Ceremony was. It's like, I have this arrow, we're going to do this, like move around the land, and we're going to prepare the world for the land for a new destiny. And all of that sounds great, I think, on paper. But if I were listening to someone talking to me, like if I heard someone say the exact same thing, I'd be like, well, what is this? How does that work? So I'll pose that to myself. I don't know. All I know is what to do. All I know is like, these are the next steps and we'll just go and see what's happening because there's nothing else which is really inspiring me to do things. So that happens. That was the first half of Gregorian year 2024. And that was exhausting. Like that really began to take its toll on me as an individual. And by the end of it, I think there were like maybe 8 or 9 different ceremonies, and all of them just got weirder and weirder, interacting with the paradigm, with like intelligence agencies, with the deep state. I mean, this is all around Washington, D.C. and West Virginia, parts of Pennsylvania, down in Norfolk, parts of Virginia. And then eventually it concluded in Asheville, North Carolina, right on the French Broad River. So I think that concluded like maybe in July. By July, I was like, all right, I'm spent. This on so many levels is just like really like was draining to me. And then in August, I took a trip to the island of Hispaniola, which is where the Dominican Republic and Haiti are. And I went there for a different reason. I didn't even really want to go there, to be quite honest. It wasn't until I was there that I kind of discovered why I was there. But Hispaniola is the birthplace of the New World. It was like, quote unquote, the first colony established by Christopher Columbus. Regardless if that story actually happened or not, it's implanted in everyone's historical mind that it did, and this is where it occurred. And so all sorts of really, really, that just opened up in a completely different chapter, and all of these different things are my perspective of reality and seeing how the Susquehanna mystery tied into other things. And like, I'm witnessing that and I'm living my life. And I'm like, well, how do I make sense of it? Like all these sort of questions. And then bang, like Hurricane Helene Blavatsky hits. And it was the biggest story of the fall. And it wipes out Asheville. Like it hits Asheville in a way which traditionally hurricanes should not hit that deep inland, particularly up in the mountains. And so now, like, this doubles back into the River and Stars and the preparation. I made some videos. I pissed off some people making those videos because they're saying, are you claiming that you created this hurricane? Like, I'm not claiming anything. I'm just saying this is what I said we were going to do, and this happened. You decide whether or not they're linked. So anyway, that's kind of like that brought me towards like the end of 2024, like riding that wave. And then winter starts to kind of settle in November, and things are starting to settle down. The farm which I'm staying in, like the activity there, because it's managed this Airbnb retreat, and it's not really ideal for like the cold, so people are coming less, and things are just settling down. Things are just settling. And I'm just kind of being reflective. I'm like, this was a hell of a year. Like a lot of things happened. I feel tired in a way. I don't think I've ever felt tired before. I feel a little bit like confused, maybe a little bit like, I don't know what my next step is going to be. But what I did know was that I was coming back to St. Petersburg. And St. Petersburg is really where it all began. Like prior to the vision for the River and Stars ceremony was impregnated, where that vision got impregnated into consciousness, was in St. Petersburg in 2023, in the autumn of 2023. And I made a whole bunch of videos talking about the mounds and all this sort of stuff, and I'm finding myself in the same place. So that's really what I just gave you was like the background, like for where we are, where we're going to go forward. But I want to pause for a moment, give you an opportunity to like share, ask questions or anything along those lines.
Yeah, take a drink. Thank you for giving us the background. And yeah, a hurricane in the mountains is kind of like a river from the stars when you think about it. But so especially the Appalachian Mountains, where yeah, it's a relatively temperate kind of peaceful place. Obviously there are mountain men and things like that, but you don't get big storms on mountains like that. So it was a total anomaly, and I think a lot of conspiracy theorists immediately jump to the conclusion that it had something to do with Silicon Valley and this push to mine certain types of minerals that were recently, within the past 10 or so years, discovered underneath Asheville. So that was a big story connecting there. And in those terms, maybe it is a new destiny for America, because where are we getting a lot of our technical minerals, the ones that go into batteries and cell phones and things like that? We get them from Taiwan. We get them from Asia. So if we have these resources here in America, it could be a big change for our destiny, not to put things on such pragmatic terms. But yeah, that was what came to mind for me when the whole Asheville situation went down. And we had two people on the show talking about that who were in the area. And one of them claims that, well, it's his opinion that the floods that came after the hurricane were sort of made to happen, in the sense that several infrastructures were neglected to the point where they knew this kind of situation was bound to happen. So there's a lot of, yeah, still to this day, doubts about that storm, and people are concerned that maybe the government had something to do with it. So I don't know. I wouldn't take any blame on your own, Mike. I don't think I think if anything,
I wouldn't say necessarily blame is not the word I ever felt about, but I'm like, this is connected. I mean, this is deeply, deeply connected in terms of like narratives.
Well,
like what exactly happened? Who knows? Like to me, if you want to look at it from the conspiratorial perspective, what makes the most amount of sense is Asheville is home of something which is called the NCEI. And the NCEI, let me see if I can remember what that stands for. It stands for the National Centers of Environmental Information. And it is like a subgroup of the subgroup of some sort of government agency. I think it falls underneath NOAA. And so all of the data, which is collected in various places, satellite locations throughout, definitely North America, but I think from the U.S. government's climate data from all over Earth is then housed in Asheville. And that data, which is housed in the data centers in Asheville at the NCEI, is the data which is used by like the UN and the World Bank and like all of the whole sort of like climate change shakedown on the governmental level of where countries need to have a certain level of like carbon emissions, and if they're not, they have to pay money or buy carbon credits. Like that whole scheme, that scheme works because of data. Like it's like you don't just go to Argentina and say like, oh, well, you guys were over your allotted amount of carbon emissions and now give us $1 billion. It's like they say like, oh, look, this is our data. You are over, now give us $1 billion. Like it's grounded on the data. That data is housed in Asheville. Said another way, when that data goes away, the scheme falls apart.
Wow. Okay.
Like, and I covered this in a video. Like, somehow that's connected as well. Yeah. But I don't think any of that even really fucking matters. Like, at least on the perspective which I'm looking at things, it's like that's still part of the same friggin' narrative. I mean, that's the whole beauty of being able to kind of like step further and further outside of the narrative of paradigm and realize like all of the narrative is based upon a primary narrative. And so even when you think like, oh, there's going to be a change, like we're going to move off of China's raw materials so we can have our own materials to create our own like system, I'm like, no, that's all still part of narrative of the narrative of the paradigm. Like, what happens when you don't need that? Like, what happens when you don't need to make batteries in order to like start thinking on that level? Like, and that doesn't necessarily mean going back to living like a Stone Age farmer. It means like there could be narratives and experiences which are just outside of your imagination. That's what it means when Disney says, I've captured your imagination. It means that the stories that you picture in your head have already been formed by us. So that's why it's important to say like, well, if that's the case, well, then let me just hold on to no stories or just be very, very soft with them. Soft meaning like I'm not going to get really sharp with the details and just realize like, what would it look like if things were different? And I don't know, but I'm moving towards that direction. That attitude has always been my attitude towards River and Stars. It's not like, oh, I'm going to change direction so that like the way I see the world is the way it should be. I'm like, no, I think the whole sort of system of thought is in such a way. I mean, the system of thought hasn't changed for as long as they've told us about history. It's just different variations within that system of thought of hierarchy, of needing things to survive, of monetary systems. All of those fall within a certain paradigm viewpoint. And what happens when that whole paradigm goes away? Well, the answer is like, well, I don't have any way to picture it. There you go. And hold no picture. That's where we want to go. Otherwise, we're just spinning our wheels within another set, someone else's enclosed system of how reality is supposed to be. We don't know what this place is. You don't know if this is a simulation or God's body or if that's one and the same or if this is the dream of a butterfly. No one knows any of that sort of stuff. No one can answer that question. So if you actually want to go and have change or you want to get onto a different timeline or whatever words you want to go and describe something immensely different than what we've been conditioned to think what life should be, you have to be willing to hold, like, I don't know. All right. Any more comments before I shift back to where we are in the real time?
Shift back to where we are. I think the NCEI thing is fascinating, but we don't need to go down that tangent.
Right. And if you're curious, if you're a listener that's curious, I made a video. I did a three-part video on the YouTube channel, my YouTube channel, about the hurricane. And the third one was called, I think it was called Mob Tactics. And it goes into just that connection between the NCEI, and I show all the receipts. And if you're curious about that, like, that's where you can find that data.
Yeah.
But yes. So I went through like this whole sort of like year, and it was tiresome, and like it's tough. It's tough no matter where you are. So I find myself down here in Florida. I came down here at the end of December, and right now is the 21st of January. So it's been about 3 weeks, let's say, right now. And I don't want to go and tell the story. So all right, so we're gonna begin it this way. So I got a good friend. His name is Ron. And the River and Stars ceremony actually began. The first like official River and Stars ceremony was in alignment with the great North American solar eclipse of last year. That took place on April 8th. And that was like, everyone can remember like all of the hype that went around that. And that's where the first one was, and that was done in Sunbury, Pennsylvania, because the sun is buried on the eclipse. That's the primary confluence of the Susquehanna River, all sorts of different reasons. And I've talked about this story plenty of times. excuse me. I'm house sitting here, and the allergies with this dog is difficult on me. So that is the beginning of the first ceremony, but there was a precursor. There was a precursor event, and that took place in January of 2023, and was at my friend Ron's house, who is in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And we did an event, like a precursor event, to kind of like open up this thing, which we're going to do. And that really opened up a big door, like a whole bunch of people who I had not been connected with are suddenly like involved in my life and all sorts of different things. So that being said, I'm down here in Florida, and so is Ron. Ron lives in Pennsylvania, but he also travels a lot. Ron is the largest mass importer of Shilajit in North America. Like, side note, like, so he's always like running around, and like, you don't get to like the sort of thing which Ron does without having a certain sort of quality. And so what his quality is he's kind of like a promoter. He's really, really good at like putting people together and making events happen. Like, that seems to be his real specialty. In fact, like, prior to this sort of work which he's doing right now, like, he would put on the official Super Bowl party, meaning like wherever the Super Bowl would be held, there'd be an official NFL party where like celebrities would go to, and like all the A-listers, like, someone has to put on that party. It doesn't just happen. Like, he was part of that crowd. Like, however you want to go and define in judgment, like, that's like kind of the energy in which this dude rolls. So anyway, that's where the River and Stars kicked off. It kicked off at his house. And he was down here in Florida while I was down here. And I was telling him, he was on the East Coast of Florida, and I'm on the West Coast. I'm on the Gulf side, right in St. Petersburg. And I'm like, Ron, I'm in town. Like, I know you're in Florida. Maybe we can meet up. He's like, definitely. So sure enough, I get a call from him last week, and he's like, yeah, I'm coming into town. He and his lady. And he's like, can you put me up? I'm like, yeah, I can put you up. So he comes, they stay, and he's like, oh, yeah, I put in some calls, and we're going to have a party here tonight. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, nothing big, nothing big. I got a bunch of people locally who I'm friends with, and we're all going to kind of meet here tonight. Is that okay? I'm like, yeah, it's definitely. He's like, no more than like 10 people. And because that's how he rolls. Like, he is like, that's, he's a promoter. He likes parties. He likes bringing people together and creating experiences. So sure enough, that happens. Great night, fun night, a little bit outside of like how I normally do things, but I enjoyed it. Met a whole bunch of just interesting people. And the next day, like we're kind of talking about like what happens. And I began thinking and I'm like, wow, this kind of corresponds with when he and I first met a previous year when we did our kickoff at his place in Harrisburg, the kickoff of the River and Stars. And I go and I look in the notebook where I keep track of all of my day timer, if you will. And sure enough, it's like 2 days away from the year to the date. The year to the date, this like kind of spontaneous sort of like party, which we had at Ron's house the previous year, happens again. And it happens in St. Petersburg. And it happens in St. Petersburg. Why that's significant is because St. Petersburg is where the whole River and Stars idea was originated. So I'm like, okay, this is getting kind of interesting. So when we were at, I had this small group, this small little like soiree, this party down in St. Petersburg last week, which Ron puts together. I have it out on the dining room table. I already had this out for my own self, for myself prior to anyone arriving. I had the starboard set up and I've got like the starboard all like set up to the what's going on in the sky. And I also have, there are three, I guess, tools, for lack of a better word, which I also have on the starboard or on that table. That includes that arrow, which I've shown and talked to you about many times, which I have used to kind of be the influence or the connection I've always had with that Abaris story, the story of the arrow circulator. I was like, wow, that's about a man who moves around on an arrow, and I made this arrow not even realizing what it was 10 years earlier, and now it's all kind of making sense. Like, that was my motivation for doing arrow circulation. And I have that, and I have a couple other tools out on the table as well. And typically, like, I love to show these tools off, and I've shown them to countless of people over the years. But for the most part, when I show them to people, like, most people are speechless. And what I mean by that is, like, they don't have anything to say. They're like speechless. They're like, they know that they're looking at something which is significant, but it tends to be outside of someone's own like point of reference. So they don't even know what to even ask questions. They're like, oh, wow, this is something. And then there's like a complete shutdown in consciousness, and then they move on. Like, I've come to realize that that's how the typical person meets these tools when they see them. But this party we had last week, and it was only like, as I said, like eight people, I think, showed up in addition to like me and Ron and Carolina. And like everyone in this group was like, holy shit, what are these things? And they were gravitating towards them in a way I have not experienced. Okay. So now I'm like, wow, like finally, like this is like this is meeting up with its audience. And so to me, I was like tickled by it. I was intrigued by it because I've always had the desire to kind of like share and explore what these things are. So that being said, about a year ago, I always have notebooks and I like to write in notebooks and I keep the notebooks very serious. Like, they're very important to me. And I did a 2-page spread in my notebook, and I dealt with the idea of these tools. And I'm going to show you the notebook right now. Let's see if you can get a good image of that. Can you see this?
Yeah.
And so what do you see? Like, how would you describe what you're looking at?
I see two wands and a and what looks like an arrow point at the end of a wand. So three
Can
wands.
Can you see the word on the top? Oh,
Furba.
No, is that the one? There we go.
Furba.
Furba.
P-H-U-R-B.
So this is all about Furbas. That's what, in a story waiting to pierce you, is that the arrows or a dagger, they're all different variations of this thing called a Furba. And a Furba is this ancient kind of shamanic Mongolian tool. And then what I have written, like on the side here, is like I kind of like describe, and this is just based upon research, which I was reading, like all these different things about like what a Furba is and how you use a Furba and all of that. Like I put it into this notebook and I wrote this really for myself, but at the party, like when people are asking me these questions, they're like, well, what do I do with it? What are these things? I'm like, oh, wow. Well, let me go show you something which I wrote. And so I go and I pull out those pages. And for the first time ever, like someone other than myself is looking at those pages and like they're reading it. And like there's some like this is how you use the arrows or the wands. And like there's this full circle. And I'm and to me, like there's this real sense of satisfaction because I do this for myself, but there's also a part of me which like wants to share it. And so this is my first opportunity to share it. So like everything's kind of coming full circle. I recognize that this party is like almost a year to the day of when me and Ron did our first thing together and the kickoff of everything. And that began like the beginning of the River and Stars, like all this sort of stuff. Okay. So let me go and show you this. I don't know if I've ever shown you this one before. Have I?
No.
All right. So I've shown you the other arrow before. This is another one. I'm going to pull this out. And I had these out on the table. You could see like the bags are significant. Let's see. And you can see this here.
Wow, that's a lot bigger than I expected.
Yeah, these guys are pretty big. All right. So this is an example. And this is a type of Furba. And I know this I didn't know what it was when I made this, but when I discovered Furbas and I saw the arrow, I realized like, okay, this is what I had been tapped into as an individual, like working through like energy and consciousness. This came out like this is part of the mystery. This is Mike's mystery. You've got your mystery. We all got a mystery. Like, what the hell are we doing here? What the hell is this place? But this is part of it. So anyway. So like sharing this Furbas and like these arrows, when I say arrow, it's another word for a Furba. So I just want to be clear when I say that. So I go and I have this experience. And then the next day, Christy flies down from Florida. She was up in, or flies down to Florida. She was in Pennsylvania and she's going to be here for the last couple of days until this thing, which I'm doing in Florida, comes to an end. And yesterday we go out. And St. Petersburg has kind of like an interesting downtown area where they've got like a lot of restaurants and little boutiques and shops. I'm like, why don't we go do that? It was kind of like too cold to be out anywhere. This was yesterday. And we go out and we get something to eat. And where I decided to go, I happened to realize, or like doing a little research of deciding where she and I should go, that there was this tiny little boutique, which was called Christie's Metaphysical Shop, something along those lines. And that was it. That was the only impetus I had. I'm like, hey, let's go check this out. It's got your name. Might be interesting. I always like to see what like shops have. Like that was it. So I picked that spot. We drive there, we get some lunch, and as we walk towards that, we're walking towards it. And that's the only reason why, of all the places in St. Petersburg, we're going to go. We're walking towards the St. Petersburg, and I see this tiny little door on the side of, like, the road. Like, it's not a big, it's to another shop, as we're walking to this Christie's Metaphysical. And it says, like, Nepalese Singing Bowls. I'm like, let's go in here. There's something in there. Like I normally like I travel really light, so I don't buy things frequently. And I'm like, there's something in there. I just have this feeling. I'm like, there's something in there for me. There's something in there for me. So we go and we look around, and it's got like all of these like really beautiful Nepalese singing bowls. And we walk around, I'm looking, and then they've got like all of this like kind of like jewelry and rings, like it's got a, and clothing, like all from Nepal. And the guy who owns the shop is Nepalese. And like the place is like interesting. Like I'm intrigued to be there, but like nothing's jumping out. I'm not going to buy a singing bowl. Like I was intrigued by it. I used to have one, which was somewhere along the lines is no longer in my possession. I'm looking around and then I start looking at the jewelry cases and I'm looking. And then there in the corner, like away from everything else, there's just one thing. Just one thing. There is. It wasn't like there were like 10 of them. There's just one. And what do you think it was?
A Furba.
A friggin' Furba. A Furba. I've never held one in my hand before. I've just drawn them and researched them and made my own version. So I see this, and I've already had the context of like, this is the next iteration of the cycle. And what I mean by that is like last year's cycle was kicked off by a soiree at Ron's place, which then led to the River and Star ceremony. And so here I am, and then like completely like this wasn't planned consciously, but me and Ron have another party. Slightly different, but very, very similar. And at this party, these Furbas are received in a way that they've never been received before. And I'm like, okay, this is part of it. And then I go to this Nepalese place. And the only reason we're there is because something else brought us there. Like there was another like trick of the mind, which got me to the right place at the right time to find the Furba. So I'm looking at this thing and I'm just like laughing on the inside because I'm the only one, me and like who's ever watching on the other side of this movie, which we're all experiencing. Like we're the only ones who are really going to appreciate the joke of this. And I'm laughing on the inside. I'm like, how can this be? How can I finally see the Furba? So I go home. And I get the notebook. I was kind of kicking myself. I wish I had that notebook with me because I would have pulled out and shown the drawings to the shopkeeper. Because the shopkeeper starts talking to me all about Furbas. He's like, this is a Furba. And he's got like this thick accent. And he's like talking to me like I've never seen a Furba before. I don't know what it was. Maybe I'm not an expert for the traditional use, but like I'm thinking in my mind, I'm like, I got a connection, brother, to this Furba. To a Furba concept, and I want to show him the notebook. So I come back home after like I got the Furba, and I go and I look. I go and I look at my notebook, and I'm like, huh, when did I draw those pictures? When did I write that? When was the actual date which I wrote it? So let me go and show you this. Let me see if you could see this. Can you see that?
Yeah, a year from yesterday.
And yesterday was when it happened, at the beginning of the golden age. Exactly 1 year to the date.
Wow.
That I drew those pictures of the Furba, which like for the first time it came value was 1 week later. Like if you begin to look at all of these different sort of pieces of like the people who came and the timing and the location and then like how the – like, yeah. So let me go wrap this up before I give you an opportunity to comment and question. So to me, I'm like, well, okay, well, what is this? What is the significance other than like, oh, wow, like synchronicity? Like, well, when you begin to pay attention, when you're beginning to pay attention to your life and your own life, you're going to be able to see certain frequencies, certain cycles, certain things that are of just like when we were talking in the very beginning about like the yuga cycles, like you're going to be able to see cycles within your own life. And if last year the party then kicked off whatever the River and Star ceremony was, well, this year's party is going to kick off the next iteration. And I know it's going to be different, and I know it's going to be deeper because now, like, the details are different. I have, like, this actual Furba in hand right now. And so then the question is, well, Well, then what is it going to be this year? What is going to be this quote-unquote aerocirculation, this thing of preparation for a new destiny? And I know exactly what that's already going to be because it's already in motion. And that is, and this is something which you and I have discussed, you're very aware of this, and it is the grounding consciousness course, which I'm doing. And whereas last calendar year, if you will, was perhaps a preparation of the land, this now is going to be a preparation of the minds. And what the grounding consciousness course ultimately is it deals with astrology, astronomy, consciousness, history, and conspiracy. And it's really not about learning anything as much as it is unlearning everything. And so what it is to prepare the soil of one's mind for the new destiny. And so it's with that, Mark, that I find myself having this conversation with you, sharing it with all of those people who are listening and watching us. Like, this is the next chapter, the next book, and this time next year we'll see where book three begins.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. First and foremost, the Hit Kit, the number one way to stay lit. And if you're looking for a brand new Hit Kit, if you already have the full selection, you're in luck. Our man Garrett over there is hard at work creating new Hit Kit designs, and he has a brand new one in stock. So go and check it out at The Hit Kit on Instagram or hitkit.us, wherever you browse the web. And make sure you use the promo code CRAZY to stay lit with each hit, thanks to the Hit Kit. Next up, we've got Brain Supreme, the number one way to microdose. And if you're curious about microdosing, go and listen to my interviews with Adam Schell. Okay, Adam Schell, he is on the cutting edge of microdosing and has combined several key nootropics into a microdosing supplement blend that is exactly what you need to improve and elevate your cognitive abilities. I use it for this podcast, and I think I've seen a big difference, not only in my overall mental well-being, but in the focus and creativity I bring to creating this podcast. So if you want to experience some of that for yourself, go to brainsupreme.co and make sure you use the promo code CRAZY15 at checkout. Try it out. You can microdose, you can hero dose, wink, wink, whatever you feel comfortable with, brainsupreme.co. And with that, folks, we'll be right back after this quick break to our dynamic ads. Check out our list of affiliate sponsors in the episode description to save when picking up a pair of Raw Optics lenses, an AquaCure hydrogen bubbler device, or some Orgonite made in the great state of Oregon by our friend Isaac Lazell. That's right. Those are our affiliate sponsors, and we are going to be right back to this episode with Michael Wan after a quick break to our dynamic ads, where you might hear me reading an ad for Hims, or maybe in the future for our newest sponsor, Mood. Anyways, if you want every episode of My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast ad-free and interruption-free with never-before-heard episodes, bonus episodes, etc., go and sign up at patreon.com/MFTIC wherever you browse the web, and make sure you use your internet browser to interact with the Patreon website and sign up from there. And then afterwards, you can do whatever you'd like, but do not sign up through Apple Podcasts, because they take an unfair percentage, and we lose out. Both of us lose out from that. So go to patreon.com/MFTIC or myfamilythinksimcrazy.substack.com, and we'll be right back to this conversation after this quick break.
It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss, or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Now Taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good, all 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is Taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting. I just have to note that about 5 minutes ago, a little bird that I've never seen before danced on my windowsill for a little bit, looking right at us within arm's distance. That was kind of strange. I've never seen that before. Must have drawn him in with the talk of the Furbas. It's really...
Yeah, that's what Mikewan means. Mikewan is the Algonquin word for feather.
Yeah.
Points to birds.
Yeah.
Which of the birds, brother? Birds aren't real. Because there's something else.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I can't even tell you what species of bird that was. I've never seen one like that before, but yeah.
It's... Probably doesn't fit into the infrastructure of the paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
Burst through. How about that?
Well, and similar to the Furba connection, I think we talked about this on the podcast maybe a few months ago. Do you remember me bringing something up about a spiritual cannibal fork from Papua New Guinea?
Perhaps. Refresh my memory.
So listening to a podcast as I do, and I find out about this whole ritual cannibalism that goes on in Papua New Guinea, where they not only eat their rivals, but they eat their ancestors to take on the knowledge and the spiritual sort of values of that person. You can also interpret it as they're canceling out the karma of that person. And what struck me and kind of connected the two is the cannibal forks look kind of like the Furbas, aside from they're three-pronged rather than coming to an arrow point, but they have all this ornate segmentation. Oh, wow. Yeah, it does have three. It kind of does have three points.
No, so, it very much does. Like, that's part of the traditional setup, is it's a three, like three blades coming together into one point.
So this would be the same concept, but imagine a fork with three fork points in a sort of like a triangle arrangement. And that's what these look like in Papua New Guinea. And there's a whole, you know, morose but spiritual context behind them. So when you brought the Furbas up, it was kind of interesting, because just a few months ago, I was on a similar quest. I walked into one of these types of shops where they have all kinds of little antiques and things. And this wasn't a Nepalese shop. This was more like a import-export kind of shop. and they had these cannibal forks, and it was only a few days after hearing about it on a podcast. I think it was the Mysterious Universe podcast. So yeah, you reminded me of that. But that Furba you have in your hand is beautiful. Is that the same one that, so when you drew that in that book, was that prior to having that, the one in your hands? Because it looks very similar to the one you drew.
I drew that picture 1 year ago.
Right.
1 year before it coming into fruition.
Right. Wow.
So that's the whole thing when I showed you that date was yeah. I drew that 1 year ago to yeah, the date no, of that. It materializing.
I get that. Yeah, no, and the one in the center in those three photos or three drawings you made looks just like the one in your hand, at least in like style. Not
right. There's
exactly
like the Furba has a general like look. Yeah. Like, so yes, yes, yes. What? And so that's part of one of the.
Well, I just wanted to ask.
Okay.
Getting around to asking this, because the whole idea of the cannibal fork is it's made out of a sacred tree. So is there, what is that Furba in your hand made out of? It looks kind of metallic. Is it bronze? Okay. Okay.
It's made out of bronze. So I'll say a couple things about this. So actually three things. One is I just quickly looked at the images of the New Guinea cannibal forks, and they are obviously, like, you can look at the archetypical shape of those and the archetypical shape of a Furba, and they come from the same root. They're birthed from the same place. They look very, very similar. So there's that. The concept of the eating, let's say your rivals, your enemies, or eating your ancestors as a way of incorporating with them, like, and maybe canceling karma, however, like, whatever the story would be of the reason why, is very complementary to, like, the notion of mounds, particularly mounds which are used with the bones of one's ancestors, as the idea of that is the bodies are returned back to the earth, and there's like a, what you're creating is a loop. Everything's a loop, like, and it circulates. Like that, I talked about that in the very beginning, about like what's going on in your mind and what's going on in the outer world. Like, that's a loop. It's no different than the loop of all of these different things. Now, the difference is between a lot of these mound sites and like what you're describing in cannibalistic practices is that it's a connection with the earth as opposed to maybe the body. But who knows? Maybe there's cannibalism also in mound builders. Like one, we have a certain view of what cannibalism is like as a certain taboo. So within the paradigm of consciousness, this is not supposed to be happening. So like anyone who gets cannibalism, like, well, maybe, but that's, you're defining it based upon the system which you've been born into. But we can go and begin to see like there was different viewpoints of reality from different paradigms. Those people lived in a different paradigm than the paradigm we live for now. And then, yeah, I guess I'll just leave it at those two points. So like, yeah, so there's definitely a correspondence between the Furba and the material and the shape with what you're saying with those forks and how that bleeds through and meets us in this current iteration of life, which we're sharing together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. I just a little tangent there, connecting the Furba with this other, the cannibal fork. Yeah, kind of strange. But when you consider where science and medicine is going, there's definitely cannibalism is on that forefront of health, right? Because what are these rich people doing? They're taking human body parts and ingesting them to live longer. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like when you begin to see that, like that's the whole adrenochrome story. And that's the whole, right. Like the fetus parts in your perfume to make like to create, yeah, false pheromones. Like, yeah, like that's, yeah, you're absolutely right. There are ideas of quote unquote cannibalism, like really deep within our culture. But it's just like, and let's take a step back. And so this is where we're going right now is, the grounding consciousness class is understanding like the nature of how we have experience. And the primary one is consciousness. And our paradigm works on a constant communication with each individual subconscious. So the subconscious means you're unaware in your conscious mind of what's going on, but there's a constant conversation in the sub or beneath conscious level between paradigm and like you as an individual. So there's this constant conversation which is going on of like the taboo of on the conscious level, taboo of cannibalism, but then on the subconscious level of like, yeah, but we're practicing cannibalism all the time. And the people who we're telling you to value the most, like the rich and the famous and like the status folks, they're the biggest like cannibals there are, but they're better than you and you're not a cannibal, so you don't get to do this. Like all sorts of weird like mind fuckery. But that's always happening. And it's that juxtaposition of being told two different stories. I mean, that's the whole idea behind subliminal advertisements, which creates like an internal tension. And then that internal tension is always being used to keep people at ease and to drive them into new directions of being so that you're living based upon someone else's value system, despite the fact that you think that you are making these choices based upon your own desires.
Right. Well, and let's get into that, because people who are listening to this who may be like the example you gave earlier of folks who come to the party and they look at the table of mystical items and they're not really drawn to it, or their consciousness is kind of like speechless, not in this kind of like awe-inspired way, but more in like a confused, can't compute kind of way.
Right.
You have a post, a recent post, and on your Instagram, Susquehanna Alchemy on Instagram, where you get into the subconscious mind. And I feel like you just kind of touched on that briefly there. So if we're going to head into that, let's do that topic. Because I feel like Furbas and these other ritual items, we're really working with our subconscious aspects more than we are our conscious aspects. That's why maybe why some people have that speechlessness, because they're not really in tune with beyond their conscious mind in a way that they are aware of. So they don't really make much sense, something like a Furba, to somebody who isn't equipped to deal in the subconscious realm. What do you think about that?
So, okay. So I appreciate that question. That's a really good question. And the thing that was on Instagram wasn't so much a post as much as it was like an advertisement for the next course. The next course is starting next week, or the next iteration. There are five classes in the course called Grounding Consciousness. And a very big part of it is understanding the role of subconscious in your experience. And you're right in terms of like something like a Furba, but this is true really with everything which is a symbol. Like there's certain, I use this phrase in our conversation a little earlier ago about there is a constant conversation between the paradigm and our subconscious, and we're unaware of that. And that takes place in the form of symbols, or that's one of the ways it takes place. Our entire English language is a subconscious communication mechanism. And so the reason, like whenever you hear people say, talk about like, don't say good morning, because morning actually means like you're mourning something. Like, that's what I mean. Like the fact that the English language is set up with double entendre, that is what a subconscious conversation is. Because your conscious mind hears like good morning, like is a greeting to start the day. But the subconscious is going to take all of the different meanings of that phonetic sound. It'd be like, it also means this. Like, that's just one example. And I'm not necessarily saying like, oh, don't say good morning, as much as it like, let's begin to become aware of how this works. That's what I mean by this is an unlearning process. This is an unlearning process because there's so much happening in each of our individual minds, myself included, that we're unaware of. But we think we're aware of it, so that, like, that's even worse than ignorance, is the fact that you think you know what it means. So that being said, this whole experience that we're having is a mystery. You don't know where it is. I don't know where it is. I don't know what it is. The only thing that's not a mystery is you could say you're here, and we can go and understand how here works, or how you work, or how I work. But the bigger picture is, at least right now, beyond our comprehension. Within that confined, probably the foundational or primary grouping of how to keep all of the supposed like 8 billion people on the same page begins not with language, because not everyone speaks English, and not all languages have the same level of subconscious double entendre. Like, every language has its own unique qualities for programming. All languages, plural for language, is limited, and they're all unique for how they work. They're all programming languages. But beneath that has to do with time. And beneath time, where we are able to understand linear time as opposed to the present moment, is through the movements of the heavens. If there wasn't a sun, if there wasn't a moon, if there weren't the planets, we would not have a mechanism to recognize that things are changing, and then have a mechanism from, in terms of how to like measure it. Measure is a very big part. Certainly all of this stuff serves us. It primarily serves us to become good functioning members within the paradigm. But where I'm going with this is, we begin by really having a new relationship with understanding the heavens, not as symbols, but by unlearning the symbols and being able to see them as what they are, in order to deconstruct the paradigm frames as given to us through astrology, as given to us through astronomy, as given to us through all of these different sort of mechanisms, to be able to see what they are, to be able to actually understand it both in conscious mind, and then be able to understand how all of the astrological models both are effective and work, but then are also at the same time, they're convoluted programs, which was created by a control system. And so that all takes place in the subconscious. And so a subliminal message loses its impact when the viewer sees what is subliminal. And so the same thing is true. As we begin to understand how subconscious works, and I'm certainly open to the idea that the whole idea of the subconscious has been created, or at least weaponized, against what it means to be human being. But as we begin to see how it works, and see how these things that have not changed for as long as they told us history has been around have been in place, the astrological interpretations currently are no different than the mythologies of ancient Greece. What hasn't changed, the same stories are anchored to the same dots in the sky. We can see why it would work, but then we can step beyond it. And as we do that, it collapses, just as a subliminal advertisement collapses in consciousness when you begin to see, like, oh, look, there's a little penis hiding in the background of that Disney picture. That's what the grounding consciousness class is. And so what I'm seeing, like the courses is on, like, it's immensely practical. You learn how to see the sky. You understand what's going on. Like, the whole thing is to get grounded in looking at the sky and demystifying what's in front of you all the time. Like, okay, this is what's going on with the moon. Not like an interpretation, like the moon is a mind-controlled Saturn thing. Like, let's not even go to that story. Let's first become aware of how the moon moves and why it moves the way it does. And as you begin to look at something and understand it without perhaps narrative, Well, then you're beginning to take away its control. At the same time, we're learning about the history. At the same time, we're learning about like these different cycles that they tell us about. And who are the people who first told us about these cycles? And you find yourself with a much more clear understanding of all of the shit show. And then from that clear understanding, like you're outside of the paradigm. Because the whole paradigm works is the fact that everyone's just subscribing to the same shit show. And they think that the shit show is all there is. But when you can see the shit show for what it is, because there's so many people who think, and this is, I'm gonna walk a thin line right now. There's so many people who are going to be out there and be like, let me tell you what the shit show is. This is what this symbol means. And this is what this means. And this is what it is. I'm like, but you're telling that within the confines of the shit show. It's just a different iteration. The same shit show. Like they don't care if you speak English or any of the other languages. All they care is the fact that everyone agrees that today is Thursday or Tuesday. Like everyone's on the same page on a certain level. So anytime when someone's like, I figured it out and let me show you how to get more Bitcoin, like it's still in the system. I want to bring people's minds outside of the paradigm, show where it is with the full disclosure of like, I don't know what's going on. All I know is this is what they're showing us, and this is where those lines exist. You're still right here. And what happens when you hold your consciousness, when you begin to understand how consciousness works outside of how they want you to apply your energy, which is like this is how you go and you become like you get a million subscribers or a million Bitcoins and a million this or that. What happens when you begin to look at it and then you begin to allow life to carry you? Life brought me here. Like I started something one cycle ago. It brought me exactly to what the next iteration. I have no idea what 2025 is going to look like, but I get a sense of where it's going. And the only way that a new destiny, this is a quote which is in the very beginning of this book, in the very front page of my book, is this quote right here. And it says, the only way that a new future can be created afresh is by those who are able to journey into the undifferentiated ground that underlies being and to bring back a new dispensation from the gods and ancestors, whatever the hell gods and ancestors are. So we're going to go and poke hole. Like, I don't know what gods and ancestors are. But what it's saying is the only way that something fresh, something new can happen is if you go outside of what you think and you don't define it. That you have a willful ignorance. In a way, this is the story of the major arcana in tarot. Like when you do the full cycle and you come back to the fool, and the fool is like, I'm not going to pretend that I know what's going on, but I do recognize that there are certain predictable nature or markers of a cycle. And that is all grounded on beginning to understand how subconscious works, which is what your primary question was.
What sort of impact have you noticed this has on others? You've worked with other people and helping people ground their consciousness. What sort of impact have you noticed in other people's lives from this understanding?
I mean, I guess that's a question for them. But what the feedback which I have received is very much, I mean, I guess it depends upon the person. That's a pointed question, and it's a good question. Like it's giving me pause. The primary feedback is the course is called Grounded Consciousness because it's meant to ground things. Like too many people just live in the abstract of like this means this and this. And it's not grounded in the reality of where we're having this experience. So first is a primary groundedness of where I am. Like I have a bearings. Like I can look at the sky. Like that's the only real truth about the heavens. Like Like, there's no such thing as these constellations. They've been created, and you can track the movements of the planets or the sun across the ecliptic through actual constellations, but the constellations are just made up concepts based upon groupings of actually visible sort of things. So people become more grounded as to where they are. And the only truth of what the relationship between the heavens are to the human being is that of navigation. They can tell you where you are and where you're going. Because once you go and start to apply meaning, you're going to say, like, this is what it's about. And that's a level above the more groundedness, which is, this is a direction to move. So the feedback I've gotten is that people become more grounded. The real community is a big part of this as well, because you're beginning to be around other like-minded human beings. And this is not, like, I want to be clear here. Like, this is a course which is designed for trailblazers. And what a trailblazer is someone who moves into a place where there has been no trail. Like, it's very safe. It's very safe to stay within paradigm. Like, in fact, the value of paradigm to the typical person is like, let me get you comfortable. Let me make you feel safe. Let me make you be predictable. Let me make life be predictable for what you can go and expect, because it's scary not knowing. Like, that's the sales job of paradigm. So the antithesis of this is, like, we're going to go where none of that is known. You are a trailblazer. You are going beyond the known world. And that's not necessarily comfortable. That's not necessarily comfortable at all. And this has always been true. This has always been a truth that, for as long as there have been, like, people and timelines and paradigm and blah, 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 there have been individuals who are like, no, this is ridiculous. I'm not buying this. This is bullshit. And they begin to go, and when they talk about truth, someone is looking for truth, they're going to a place where there are no contradictions. Where they go and they look at the story that they've been indoctrinated with, and like, hold on, there's a contradiction, because if this is true, that means it's at odds with this story, and now there's a contradiction, and I'm going to where there's no contradiction. So that's truth. And there's always been a time for people to do that. But as at the beginning of mine and your conversation began, Mark, and we talked about this and, like, the Trump statement of the golden age. And I'm like, I don't know if there's a golden age, but there certainly seems like there is a fork in the road right now. An even more clear fork in the road than there was, like, 5 years ago, as there was 5 years before that. Like, we're moving towards something. The timing of this course, which is what that whole thing of, like, last year's timing was about the ground and this is about consciousness. The timing of this is, like, meeting people now, whereas one could spend their entire life in paradigm and theoretically have, like, an enjoyable experience. The timing is, like, now the world is changing and this is how you move into a new place. And whereas before this was more of an individual experience, right now, because this course, because of what's happening in the paradigm and it's changed, it's changing nature at this moment. And the fact that this is a course which is being taught to other people at the same time, there is a communal aspect which is being created, which has two primary, like, impacts. Number one is the fact that the quote-unquote scariness of going into the unknown is reduced because you're doing this with other people and they're having their own kind of experience. So there's the community of that. But then there's a secondary impact. Another factual statement of how our realm seems to work is something happens through critical mass of consciousness. When enough people get together and see things the same way, it magnetizes more energy to it. And what we're doing is we're magnetizing not like another story, not another, like this is what the answer is, as much as we are magnetizing a unlearning. We are magnetizing a rewilding. We're magnetizing a willingness of people to like, okay, let's go in this together. And the more people that do this, the less scary it gets. And then the less scary it gets, the more energy around it, the more clear it gets to other people who are like, oh, wow, there's something going on here. Let me move in that direction as well. And so the entire kind of like community, the critical mass which is being created, just begins to grow and grow, which to me sounds very much like a splitting of cells.
Yeah. Well, and it brings me to this idea that I talked about with Peter Shampoo, who you knew his work all too well. I think you were one of the reasons why I initially even became aware of Peter's work. You suggested I look into his book. I just had him on the podcast, and he was talking about these sort of bubbles that are formed on the earth. And we think of ley lines in this linear fashion, but the way he explains them is they're actually three-dimensional, and they're like they're spheres and spheres of energy. And connecting that to the larger scale, that's kind of how Anthony Peak and some other really interesting gentlemen that we've had on the show have talked about our universe or our multiverse. It's almost like a series of bubbles. And in that way, what if our timelines or our realities can bubble off literally, where some people enter reality A and others enter reality B, and it's like this cell division where one thing becomes two and on and on and on and on.
Certainly seems that way. I mean, and that's, I think we as individuals, we walk a tightrope. So we're trying to conceptualize that which cannot be conceptualized, right? Yeah. So we come up with so we've got this thing like, well, what's this mystery? How does this work? What's going on? And we kind of want to know what it is. So we come up with models to be able to, or a map to be able to explain the unexplainable. And that's kind of necessary. But if we rely too much on them, well, then we're stuck in that bubble. We're stuck in that paradigm. And so to be able to be flexible enough to recognize that the models or the maps are helpful, but to not be completely grounded in like, well, this is what it is. That to me is what the dance is really about. And dance is a great metaphor. Like, it's really like that type of movement, like a coordinated, both free and structured movement, ideally like in rhythm to something else.
Yeah. The bird's distracting me again. So the course is coming up at the end of the month. How do people get involved, Mike? Because
all right, excellent question.
As this episode comes out, I think it'd be right on time for people to sign up, and it should be.
When does it come out, Mark?
This episode should be out. Let's look at the calendar. Well, considering everything, I'll put it out on Friday. How's that?
So is that the earliest we can get it?
Yeah.
All right, well, then Friday it's coming out. So that's actually a really good day.
It is. Okay.
So if you're listening to this one Friday, so this is a slight pivot. This makes people in my life, it drives them crazy, because this is how I manage things. The class begins, I think it's the 27th or the 29th, okay? It's limited to just 20 participants. As you and I are recording this right now, there are 10 participants. So there are only 10 spots available right now for the one that begins on the 29th. And that will go through the Gregorian calendar structure of February and early March. You're going to be part of it. And so it's an opportunity also for a listener to not only have an opportunity to interact with me as an individual and as a human being, but you also get to interact with our good friend Mark here and hopefully some other interesting people. I mean, that's really what I've found from the feedback from people who take the class is it's the community aspect and who you get to interact with. So if you want, if you're listening, and if you're one of the handful of people who are intrigued enough to sign up, like I'll include for you, Mark, the details of like how you sign up. Like I don't have websites. Like I do the absolute bare minimum to interact with this realm, which doesn't make it convenient. But yeah, that's the way to do this, or the way I at least do this. But and it's also a way of me indicating, like, I don't want to meld with this technocratic one and zero realm, but I'm still going to because it's providing an opportunity for me to reach different people. So, yeah, so follow the details, which I guess will be included in the notes here of this call or this podcast. and that's how someone can sign up.
Right on. And it is the 29th of January when the first class begins. So yeah, if you're listening to this on the day it comes out or a few days after, you only have a couple more days to sign up and get involved. But I'd love to see you there. And so would Mike. And
there's nothing like this out there. And so this is like data heavy. I'll be the first one to admit that. What I'm good at, a skill which I've ascertained, which seems to like fit what I'm doing here, is I'm able to articulate concepts in a way that's visually interesting. Like we live in a time where all of our concentration has been eroded. Every single time you go on Instagram, every single time you pick up a smartphone, every single time you look at the TV in a movie or Netflix is eroding our concentration. No shame around that. I watch stuff like it's happened to me as well, but that's part of like where we're getting strength, where we're being challenged to get stronger right now. I know that's a fact, and I know that the information which is covered is in like it's a lot for people who, particularly for people who've gone through a process of a weakening of concentration. So because of that, I make really good slides. And I organize it in such a way where across the five courses, there's 340 different slides. Everyone gets that slide deck in a PDF form. Each slide is like visually appealing and it goes back to concepts. It's not like a book form, but there's information on it. So one of the real benefits of how this class has been, or at least the way which I've designed it in my particular like flavor, is it is pop culture-y, so it can speak to people that way. It's visually appealing, it's mentally appealing, but it's also consistent. It's consistent along these lines: astronomy, astrology, consciousness, conspiracy, and history. All for the same purpose of breaking down the bullshit walls that have been put in all of our minds to this is how you see reality. And when you come out of it, you're going to be able to stand and see things as they are. And then however life is going to move you, it's going to move you.
Right on. Right on. Well, say no more, Mike. I think that's a great place to leave people unless you have some final thoughts for us here. But yeah, I'm excited to take the class and excited to see everybody who joins us, and it's going to be five classes with two open discussions as well, so there's going to be plenty of time to learn, plenty of time to talk and get to know each other and ground consciousness. I love it.
All right, let me say one last thing, and then we're going to wrap it up. So how I've had this, I just opened up enrollment maybe 2 weeks ago. It's only a three-week window of open enrollment. Every week I increase the price of what it costs. I do that to like motivate. I want to fill the class up right away because there's nothing. I don't enjoy pitching a class because that's what it feels like. Like I'm pitching it, but I want people there. And I also need their ducats because that's how the system works. So like there's that whole sort of thing. So I set this up. So every 7 days, the price went up another $100. So it went, or $50, $250, $300, $350. Where we stand right now, Mark, is we're at the 350 mark. That's what it costs for this class. That being said, if you're listening to this, if you're part of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy family, you send me an email. Say, hey, I listen to you and Mark, and I want to take the class. And what I'll do is I'll give you that 250. Like I want people to come. I don't want this to be limited. If this resonates with you, and if you don't have the money, like you're still going to come. I'm still going to find a way to get you in here. But this is another way to, like, I want to fill this class with this community, because this community has been very, very supportive of this journey. So I'm going to throw that out as well.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Mike. And your email, please share that. Obviously, people can reach out to you on Instagram if they have an Instagram, Susquehanna Alchemy on Instagram. And your YouTube channel by the same name, Susquehanna Alchemy, should have your email there. But for people who might not be so tech savvy, can you share your email with the audience?
Well, hopefully it's in the notes. But yes, it's MKWAN, MKWANN. At comcast.net. Slight side, really funny. That email came out, like I came up with that email in the 90s when email first came out, well before I ever heard of MK Ultra. So I find that very, very interesting. In my own self-reflection, I'm like, how the hell did I MK Ultra myself? MK stands for Mike. Like, that's where the MK stands for.
Ah, okay. So K isn't your middle name.
And it also is my middle name. So it's Michael Keith Albert Wan. For all of those who want to know what the name is that they gave me to anchor to this body.
Well, I never knew that, but it is funny considering the feather symbolism that your name could be an onomatopoeia for a sound a bird makes, macaw.
There you go.
Or a name of a bird for that matter. But anyways, always brilliant to have you on the show. Always wonderful, the conversations we get into, Mike. And you've talked about so much on your YouTube channel lately, but people would really be doing themselves a disservice to miss out on this opportunity. And with that $100 discount, folks, get in line right away because there's only so many spots left. Mike, you're the best. I appreciate you. And I'm really grateful to be a part of the course because we talk a lot. And sometimes the pressure of keeping up with you puts me in a certain zone. And it'd be nice to just sit down with others and listen and maybe have a chance to ask a few questions. But I'm going to be enjoying that. The less pressure of not having to like serve the ball back to you each time you say something really brilliant. So I'm going to enjoy that part of the course too. And with that, folks, I hope to see you a part of it on the 29th. Until next episode, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that was another episode of Your Handbook for the Apocalypse, I guess, in a way, although Mike and I don't really do that show, and unfortunately, that RSS feed has gone unattended to. So, yeah, I don't know. I didn't really foresee that when I started all these different podcasts, but 'tis life, you know? But there is still available our podcast, Your Handbook for the Apocalypse, the Susquehanna Alchemy feed. And every time I have Mike on the podcast, it sort of feels like an episode of Your Handbook for the Apocalypse because you never really know where the conversation is going to go when Mike Wan is in the mix. But if you want to be a part of this Grounding Consciousness course, go to the Linktree link in the episode description and sign up. I hope to see you there. And remember, you get $100 off if you email Mike and let him know that you heard about it on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. So go and do that right now if you're interested in signing up. I hope to see you there. There's going to be 5 courses and 2 group chats, and I will be hopefully a part of all of it and able to interact with everyone. So looking forward to that. And until next episode, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good, all 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live, must start and file in app by 2/18.